Blog Talk Radio.
Probably upwards of 70% of you know, the loyal live show listeners. No show tomorrow. Got a wedding and whatnot. Monday as well. Won't be here, traveling back from said wedding. So, just a quick heads up. But fear not. Of course, as I usually plan out, the week will proceed, other than the fact that there's no live show tomorrow, normally. So videos will upload on Saturday. Videos will upload on Monday. So I'll be gone, but you won't miss me too much because the YouTube show will play a little illusion on you and make you think I'm still doing shows. Funny how scheduled uploads work. But anyway, just a quick heads up on that front, but I got an awesome show for you today. I got it jam-packed full of stuff so that we get in as many stories as possible before I'm gone for a few days here. Right off the bat here, I'm going to do a story that I was teasing yesterday, which is a super important story and an interesting story. ISIS actually wrote in their own magazine, yes, they have a magazine, why it is they hate the West. So we're going to break that down. Donald Trump has had a super bad past few days, and now everybody in the GOP is panicking over that. And it's worse than I thought. I was amazed by some of the headlines, so we'll break that down for you. Bernie Sanders to the rescue. That's all I'll say about that one. And George W. Bush decided to take some veiled shots at Donald Trump. Whose team are we on? Team W or Team Ferret on your head? We'll figure that out. That's a little later on in the show. All right, let's get started here because, as usual, I highly doubt I'll get to all this. And we'll kick it off with the story about ISIS. For those of you who don't know, ISIS actually has their own magazine. Weird, I know. And they took some time in their most recent issue to explain why it is they hate the West. So let me give you some of their direct quotes here, and then we'll go further and we'll continue to break it down. So first of all, they say, quote, "You reject the oneness of Allah, claiming that he has a son. You fabricate lies against his prophets and messengers, and you indulge in all manner of devilish practices. In the case of the atheist fringe, we hate you and wage war against you because you disbelieve in the existence of your Lord and Creator. We hate you for your crimes against Islam and wage war against you to punish you for your transgressions against our religion. The bombs, the wars, the drone attacks on Muslim countries." They continued, "The fact is, even if you were to stop bombing us, imprisoning us, torturing us, vilifying us, and usurping our lands, we would continue to hate you because our primary reason for hating you will not cease to exist until you embrace Islam." Now, Inquisitor breaks it down further here. They go on to explain, "Though the Mirror, who originally published this article, breaks the ISIS diatribe against the West down to six simple points, it actually goes into far greater specifics, such as bashing Western thinkers like Charles Darwin, Sigmund Freud, and Karl Marx, ranting against coffee drinkers, and criticizing Western women whom they argue should be docile and submissive." Okay, so you have a pretty clear picture as to what they believe. Now, remember, what I was quoting there to you, portions that they translated, and that's ISIS in their own words. So they say it's because you reject Islam, it's because you're infidels, it's because you're the atheist fringe and you don't accept your Lord. It's because of that that we're going to attack you. Now, like I said, at separate parts they say, like, quote, this is one of the reasons they hate us. The bombs, the wars, the drone attacks on Muslim countries. So that's another reason. But then they also go on to say, yeah, but even if you stop doing that, we'd still fucking hate you because it is our ideology and it is our religious fundamentalist belief that our voodoo is true, your voodoo is false, and therefore we have a right to kill you because our voodoo laws say we can kill you. So make no mistake about it, what we're talking about here is true Kool-Aid drinkers. They're actually brainwashed, they actually believe their asshole interpretation of Islam, and nobody should deny that. So in other words, when people say about ISIS or about Al-Qaeda that, oh, come on now, this has nothing to do with religion. That's not true. They're telling you, yes, this does have something to do with religion. I get it that it's hard for people to wrap their minds around the idea that people could actually believe in such comical books as if they're holy. But they do. But they do. I mean, we actually can debunk them fairly quickly because there's flat-out unscientific claims in there. Like, for example, in Islam, they say that semen comes from your backbone. That's not true. They say there's talking feet and talking hands. Also ridiculous. Muhammad splits the moon. You know, in some hadiths, they say women are mentally deficient. So, I mean, these are things that are just, you know, comical. And we can disprove it, but there are some people still hold on to it and still believe it. Now, that's obviously not to say that all Muslims or all religious believers are terrorists. That's obviously not the case. Some people, you know, blow off portions of the holy book. Other people cherry-pick the good parts of the holy book. But bottom line is, when it comes to ISIS, the idea that, oh, it has nothing to do with religion, that's not true. They're telling you, no, this does have something to do with religion, and this is in their own words. This isn't somebody putting a spin on it. This isn't, you know, somebody who has an agenda. Oh, this is what I'm going to do. No. This is in their own words. It's from their fucking magazine. Okay, now let me give you some more here because what this reminded me of is Osama bin Laden's letter to America. So this was obviously after the terror attacks on 9/11. Osama bin Laden, leader of Al-Qaeda. And he went on to explain in his own words, addressing this to, you know, regular people in America. Hey, why do I hate you and why do we hate you? Well, let me lay it out for you. So here are some excerpts from his letter to America. He says, quote, "The first thing that we are calling you to is Islam." Again, it has something to do with religion. He continues, "The religion of the unification of God, of freedom from associating partners with him, and rejection of this, of complete love of him, the exalted, of complete submission to his laws, and of the discarding of all the opinions, orders, theories, and religions which contradict with the religion he sent down to his prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him." Now bin Laden continues. He says, "You attacked us in Palestine. The blood pouring out of Palestine must be equally revenged. You attacked us in Somalia. You supported the Russian atrocities against us in Chechnya, the Indian oppression against us in Kashmir, and the Jewish aggression against us in Lebanon. What happens in Guantanamo is a historical embarrassment to America and its values, and it screams into your faces, you hypocrites. What is the value of your signature on any agreement or treaty?" Talking about very clearly how the U.S. violated international law with Guantanamo and violated it in other respects. He continues, "We call you to be a people of manners, principles, honor, and purity, to reject the immoral acts of fornication, homosexuality, intoxicants, and gambling." Okay, so now I'm going to leave links to both of these articles in the video description box, and you guys can read it for yourself. You can read ISIS in their own words, why they hate us. You can read bin Laden's letter to America. And what you're going to find is they're pretty clear and they're pretty consistent. It is a mix of factors. So, and I actually think bin Laden gave more geopolitical reasons than did ISIS this time around. But you have a mix of factors, and the mix includes, hey, your foreign policy against us, what's happening in Palestine, what you did to Muslims at Guantanamo Bay, and all these other grievances that they point to. And then what you'll find is the overarching factor is, and many of them point out, well, even if you stop doing that, we're still going to tag you. So we still hate you, and we hate you because you haven't accepted Islam, and you haven't accepted our fundamentalist interpretation of Islam, so you're disbelievers, and we have permission, we have carte blanche. In fact, it is the moral thing to do to strike out against you and kill you. So that's the main breakdown. Those are the factors. Yes, there is a geopolitical angle. Yes, that, you know, you can argue certain things play a role. In some cases, you could argue it's, you know, they're psychopaths. Certain individuals are psychopaths. You can argue that in a place that had more opportunity, there wouldn't be as many jihadists. You could argue if it wasn't for the missteps of foreign policy, there wouldn't be as many jihadists. If it wasn't for the occupation, there wouldn't be as many jihadists. But there's no denying that, yes, there is an overarching religious argument. These are religious terrorists. And nobody should say, hey, this has nothing to do with religion, because that's simply not true. And then the question becomes, well, how do we fight back against this? I would argue, number one, obviously, you have to defeat them when it comes to ideas and concepts. So, yeah, directly counter-argue their propaganda and their nonsense mythology with facts. And the more sunlight there is on their ideology and on how their fundamentalism is dumb, the fewer fundamentalists there will be. So directly attack the problem of fundamentalist Islam and explain, I actually believe that people are going to think enough about this and listen to the arguments enough to go, oh, yeah, that actually is kind of bullshit. And at the very least, you know, just become, whatever, less interested in that, or at best, perhaps even leave the religion. Now, I know that's hard in so many countries because they kill you if you say, I'm an apostate. But if you change the hearts and minds, bottom line is you wouldn't have nearly as many terrorists. So point number one is, yes, directly attack fundamentalist Islam in the realm of ideas, and you can defeat it that way. I mean, you could argue point number two is, I don't think the U.S. has done a good job fighting this militarily, because there are more jihadists now than there were when we started. So if you want to, for example, support, give humanitarian aid and give support to, say, the Kurds who are fighting ISIS, give support to some Shia militias who aren't committing atrocities who are fighting ISIS, fine, I'm fine with that too. So yes, there are some people who are TFG, dog, too far gone. And it's a reasonable thing to say that, you know, they need to be taken out by somebody. I just argue not the West, because then that gets retaliatory attacks and people want retribution, and we've shown that we suck at this. So let other people do that. That's point number two. And then point number three is, do the right thing policy-wise. Do the right thing policy-wise. So saying that, while it is clear this has a lot to do with religion, clearly, it's also clear that it would be much harder for Al-Qaeda and ISIS to recruit if we take away the fuel of the stupid wars and the torture and the occupation. Because think about it. Usually, or in many cases, the way they hook in people to become part of the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or ISIS is there has to be some kind of grievance there, and then they hook them in, and then they can brainwash them into the ideology. But if the original grievance isn't there, it's much harder to create somebody who's going to do monstrous things. So, and that's not all cases. Sometimes you're just brainwashed from when you're young and there doesn't need to be a grievance. But in many cases, there's a grievance. So, you know, our drones, for example, have a 90% failure rate. We get the wrong people 90% of the time with our drones. Well, if you blow up an aunt, an uncle, or a baby, or a grandma, well, obviously, any normal person might look at that and go, that's it. I'm going to do revenge. I'm going to do retribution. I'm going to do attacks against the West. Who's fighting them? Oh, okay, only these groups are fighting them. I guess I'm joining ISIS. I guess I'm joining Al-Qaeda. I guess I'm, you know, going to be involved in that. People who otherwise wouldn't give a fuck, don't think about America, it's whatever, now all of a sudden would be anti-American. If we fuck up that badly and repeatedly, I mean, we killed hundreds of thousands of civilians in Iraq. You don't think you're going to further radicalize the population if you do that? Of course you're going to do that. So if you take away the fuel that to the narrative, yes, you're going to have fewer jihadists. And this isn't just opinion. This is fact, man. I mean, there are more jihadists today than there were when we started the war on terror. The whole point of the war on terror was we need to limit the number of jihadists, limit the number of terrorists, if not eliminate terrorism. Well, it's gotten worse since we started. And a lot of that has been fueled by Guantanamo. A lot of that has been fueled by the Iraq war. A lot of that has been fueled by our drones. And yes, as people repeatedly point out who are part of that group, a lot of it does have to do with the occupation in Palestine. I mean, if you were to make an actual – now, granted, there are some people who will say never, never, never the Jews need to be totally off the land and there can't be a state of Israel. You're never going to convince those people. But it's a much harder to convince many people if, let's say, you do a two-state deal, Palestine is internationally recognized, you have your borders, I'm fine with building a giant fucking wall down the middle of it, and then what's the argument? You can't say, oh, they're all so bad. I mean, look at what they did. No, 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 hold on now. Palestine is a state. We did a peace deal. It's recognized by the UN. What are you talking about? Yeah, but the Jews, they're bad. You know how the Jews are. But they did a peace deal. They did a deal. Palestine exists. It's much harder to get people to go, I'm going to join the bad guys if we show we're reasonable. We're not going to torture because that's against international law. We're not going to kill 90% the wrong people with drones because that's stupid and that's immoral. We're not going to do dumb wars that kill hundreds of thousands of people because that's wrong, because that means we're the bad guy in that scenario. So if we take away our ills, it makes it harder for them to recruit. As ISIS points out, look, even if you stop, we're still going to attack you. Yeah. And they say it's because of our religion. Yeah, but it's harder for them to recruit people if people can look at the West and go, you know, they're not that bad. I mean, look at what we did. We rebuilt our enemies after World War II. That was a genius idea, because you do that and all of a sudden people who went, oh, these fucking monsters, look at what they did. Now all of a sudden you have to weigh the evidence. You have to go, okay, look, firebombing a Dresden,
oh, fucked up.
But you know what? They rebuilt. They came in after and they said, okay, look, we won, but now common humanity kicks in and we're going to help rebuild and we're going to make this better. Imagine if we took a similar mindset and a similar approach to the Middle East. You're going to take the vast swaths of the population who are either on the fence or becoming more and more anti-American as a result of our actions. You're going to take them and you're going to make them go, oh, you know what? They're actually not that bad. They came and they rebuilt the mosque. They came and they rebuilt the school. They came and they added some infrastructure. And now they're gone. They didn't come and do it and take over and we're going to dominate you and we're going to occupy you. No. So this is the reasonable approach, I think, to dealing with ISIS. Yes, we can do our part and should do our part in having the correct policies in place. That is true. But then also nobody should deny, hey, this is an overarching religious issue. And what I find online today is that you have two rigid camps, man, and it's almost at the point where I laugh anytime I see somebody in one camp or the other start talking, because it's always the same answer for one camp or the other camp. So for one camp, they go, it's always has to do with the United States. It's always U.S. foreign policy. It's always imperialism. Anybody who's ever attacked the U.S. or had anti, you know, Western thoughts, these are all people who have some sort of reasonable political grievance. No, that's not true. In some cases, that's true. But that's not across the board true. And then the other camp is, no, no, it is always Islam. It's always the religion. There's no such thing as an attack based on retribution or revenge, based on missteps in U.S. foreign policy. They're just barbarians and savages who believe the ideology. And to even discuss a U.S. role in this is being an apologist. You're a Muslim apologist. So, and people are so entrenched in those fucking camps that when somebody comes along and gives nuance like me, you're painted by one camp as, oh, my God, all he does is blame Islam and blame religion, and you're painted by the other camp as, oh, my God, all he does is blame the West and blame imperialism when it's the religion. Well, no, I'm here to tell you it's both things, and both roles are super important. ISIS tells you, yes, I'm doing this because of my religion. I'm doing this because of my fundamentalist interpretation of Islam, and you don't believe, so you're evil. They tell you that. They tell you that. But what I'm telling you is it is also true that if they didn't have the other grievances that were hooks to other people to recruit, there wouldn't be as many of them. So both things are true. Let's be adults and let's embrace nuance because it's right. Okay. I believe I'm clear. Actually, one more thing. And just the final thing on this, understand that different circumstances exist too. So if you talk about the history of the treatment of gays and women within majority Muslim countries and theocracies, that has nothing to do with U.S. foreign policy and nothing to do with the West. It just doesn't. That, you know, the gays are viciously oppressed and women are treated as second-class citizens in many of these societies, that is directly linked to the ideology, 100%, directly linked to the religion and their fundamentalist interpretation of it. If you deny that, you're being goofy. So in some instances, yes, it is purely the ideology. In other instances, sometimes these attackers tell you, I'm doing this because you bombed Syria, I'm doing this because my uncle was killed in a drone strike, I'm doing this because of Palestine. You have to weigh those factors too. So in some cases, it's purely response and revenge and retribution. And in some cases, it's a mix. Some cases, it's, you know, hey, this has to do with the religion, and it has to do with, you know, my response to this political grievance and this extreme poverty situation and this hopelessness that I have. So between individual cases, and we can also have the broader conversation as to how much each factor plays in. But we should hear the other side out as opposed to just assuming automatically they're the enemy, you know, if they happen to believe U.S. imperialism plays a bigger role or if they happen to believe religion plays a bigger role. Again, nuance is the answer. All right, Donald Trump. We got a lot to get to. Let's go to him. Donald Trump has had a bad past few days, and now everybody in the GOP is panicking. So Raw Story explains here. He refused to endorse House Speaker Paul Ryan and Senator John McCain in their primary races, repeatedly insulted a Gold Star family, joked about receiving a Purple Heart, and removed a noisy baby from a campaign rally, all in about 4 hours on Tuesday afternoon. So now John Carl, the chief White House correspondent for ABC News, is reporting this bombshell as to how the big-time players in the Republican establishment are responding to this.
And you're reporting something pretty startling right now. You've got senior officials inside the Republican Party actually exploring what to do if Trump drops out.
This is absolutely unprecedented. First of all, I am told that RNC Chairman Reince Priebus is furious, that he has had multiple discussions with Trump telling him he needs to drastically change course. But here's the news. I am told that senior officials at the party are actively exploring what would happen if Trump dropped out, how to replace him on the ballot. The answer, George, is they can't force him out. He would have to go out voluntarily, and then it would be the 168 members of the RNC, through a complicated process, they would pick a new candidate. It would have to happen by early
September.
They
think that's a real possibility?
He is so unpredictable right now. They are so unable to control his message that they just don't know, and they clearly think it is a possibility, which is why they're looking at these rules.
What the fuck? So top Republican officials are going, we need to have a backup plan for if he drops out, because good googly moogly, he is self-destructing, and this could be the end for him. So what will we do? What's the process if he drops out? This is unprecedented. And now they're determining, oh, yeah, by the way, how convenient. If he does, well, all the top Republican officials get in the room and we pick. That's almost like the ideal scenario for them. They probably want him to drop out. In fact, they definitely want him to drop out. They might be applying pressure on him right now, like, you got to drop out. You got to drop out. And with, you know, the story we covered yesterday, it was a gigantic story, and we learned his motivations into running in the first place, you start to wonder whether or not he thinks that's an option that he might like. Because, guys, one of his top officials in the campaign admitted, dude, we had no idea we would win. None. He didn't expect to win. If you told him at the beginning he would win, he would have been like, ha, that's cute. So we learned that angle of it. We also learned his strategy was a mistake. He met with Mitt Romney's top financial bundler, the person who raises all the money for him, and he's like, can I count on you to help me? And the guy just didn't want to be in the meeting anymore, so he made some shit up. He's like, what had happened was, here's the thing, man, I don't know why you're raising money at all anyway. Why don't you just go out there and say, I'm against the corruption, I'm against these puppets, and then maybe use that as a strategy. So he's just trying to get out of a meeting, and he said that. Trump said, great idea. And it worked. And it fucking worked. So, based on all these stories, you get the sense that he's obviously in over his head. There's no doubt about that. But now they're talking about – the thing is, I would be amazed if there wasn't immense pressure behind the scenes on him where people are saying, no, you're dropping out. Like, I think top Republican officials are telling him, dude, over. It's over. It's over. You're dropping out right now. Now, knowing Donald Trump, that might be all the fuel he needs to say, fuck off, I'm riding this bitch into the rocks. But the fact that that kind of pressure is likely being applied to him, the fact that this is a leak that, you know, a top reporter is talking about, that Republican officials are scrambling, like, what'll happen if he drops out? Man, what a weird election cycle this is. And by the way, so this is worst-case scenario, what they're talking about here. Oh my goodness, he'll drop out, and then we got to have a process in place where we fix everything. And by the way, how will Trump's fans respond? Ooh, I don't even want to think about that. But best case scenario is there was another article that said that the top Republican officials, like even people like Rudy Giuliani, they planned an intervention for Donald Trump where they sit him down and they go, hey, look, slapstick, get your shit together. You can't say this, you can't say that, you can't question this fucking, you know, Muslim family that had their son die in war fighting for the United States of America, and all of a sudden you're saying stupid shit that's against them. You can't do that. You can't do that. The fucking Purple Heart scenario, I even missed that story. You know, as after he was attacked, after Trump was attacked by the Khan family, he goes and does at one of his rallies, he has some fucking military person give him a Purple Heart. And he said, I always wanted a Purple Heart, except this way I didn't even have to work for it. Oh, God, Don, shut the fuck up. Don, what are you doing? Oh, it's so stupid. Why would you say that? He's just inviting all this fucking controversy. So, but here's the thing. When push comes to shove, will it all stick? I don't know. Because in my mind, and you guys have heard me make this argument a trillion times before, but the time to get outraged and to, you know, do the breaking news banners and to talk about it for a week straight is, for example, when Donald Trump said, we need to take out the families of ISIS in the Middle East. So advocating killing civilians in the Middle East. Okay, there's a time where you go hair on fire, everybody go nuts. He's talking about killing civilians on purpose. That's a U.S. president saying, I want to be a terrorist. There's a time to lose it. It's a time to lose it when he keeps repeating about how the Geneva Convention is, quote, the problem, and it's out of date, and he's going to change it. That's a problem. Fucking talk about that. When he says, I'm going to bring back torture, I'll bring back worse than waterboarding. I'm going to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. You lose it over that. You should lose it over that. These are the things that are super important. But it's happened too much in this election where the worst things he says that are policy related, put that to the side. But when he says things that are, you know, kind of PC outragey, like, oh, he kicked a baby out of the thing. I did a segment on that yesterday. I don't give a fuck. The baby was loud. He's like, and he wasn't too much of a dick about it. He was joking at first. Like, oh, I love when, oh, healthy baby. I love it. I love it. And finally he's like, you know, would you mind just please take it outside? Like, people are more outraged over that than when Trump says, I will actively kill babies in the Middle East. I will shoot fucking missiles at their faces. Because we got to take out their families. We got to take out their families. So the meter is off. I've always felt like that about the mainstream media and Trump. Their outrage meter is just broken. They don't know when to be outraged. Like, they're making a bigger deal about he refused to endorse Paul Ryan and John McCain. Like, I get how that's a big deal because it's Speaker of the House and it's John McCain, who's been a senator, a Republican senator since the year 8. So I get it, big deal, but there's more focus on that than any of the other legitimate scandals. So I don't know. There's a good chance this only emboldens Trump and gives him more fuel, and he goes, fuck it. No, fuck all you guys. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it my way. Either that happens or the crazy scenario, the unprecedented scenario of basically he's given no choice, and they tell him, no, we're telling you you're dropping out. That's it. That's it. And then somehow the party forces him into doing it by tricking him or whatever the case is. Into voluntarily stepping down, and then we move on to the next chapter. But either way, this election is fucking weird, it's strange, and it's crazy. Okay, I gotta blow off this first break. I've been doing that a lot lately, because I gotta get in more stuff, man. More stuff. Politico has a hilarious story here about the Democratic Party and Bernie Sanders. They report, as Bernie Sanders gears up for the next phase of his political revolution, Senate Democratic candidates are clamoring for his support in swing states, where his anti-trade populist message give Democrats a key political edge come November. They continue, it's not difficult to see where Sanders' progressive populist message could take hold. Ohio and Pennsylvania, two Rust Belt states where Democratic candidates are hammering their Republican opponents with Sanders-esque anti-trade rhetoric. All right, so some of you might be listening to this and go, what's the big deal, Kyle? It's just, why wouldn't you want Bernie Sanders' help, and why wouldn't you want his help in swing states? That seems to make a lot of sense. My response to you is, yes, of course it makes sense, but this is the same Democratic Party that just argued in the primary season that Bernie Sanders is a weak general election candidate, and now they come along and admit when they need him, oh, no, he's great. He's a tremendous general election candidate. He's the best one there is. What are you talking about? We want him specifically for swing states. This contradicts everything they said in the primary season. The Democratic establishment said, well, I mean, come on now. You can't go with Bernie Sanders. Why would you go with Bernie Sanders when Hillary Clinton is the way to go? Because Hillary Clinton is a stronger general election candidate, and she gets more moderates, and everybody knows those moderates are what's needed to win in the general election, and obviously she'd do better in the swing states. Now they're like, truth comes out because we need him. We need you in swing states, Bernie. We need you in swing states. Did you know Bernie Sanders was up against Donald Trump in a general election, in national polls, anywhere from 9 percentage points to 15 percentage points, depending on which poll you look at. In the average, he absolutely destroyed him. As of right now, Hillary's about 5 percentage points on average up on Donald Trump. And this is the best she's been in a long time. And meanwhile, you know, you cut Bernie Sanders' average in half, and he's at 5 percentage points above Trump. So Bernie always had a gigantic edge over Trump. And we pointed that out. We were the ones pointing at the polls going, are you guys fucking stupid? Are you dense? You're saying Hillary's a general election candidate. That's based on nothing. That is a myth. That is an establishment-created myth. She's establishment. She's the bigger name in terms of celebrity status. So in a general, obviously she's going to do better. No, her unfavorables are through the fucking roof. His are great. His unfavorables are super low. Everybody who's going to vote for Hillary would vote for Bernie, too, and then plus you get the benefit of all the Bernie voters who aren't going to vote for fucking Hillary. He gets independents really excited. He gets millennials excited. His message goes over best in the swing states. They fucking blew it, man. They blew it. You had a shoe-in election. I would have called the election the second the primaries were over who was Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump. Now with Hillary Clinton, I told you guys a million times, the yo-yo effect is going to continue, and it's going to be a close election. Or actually, I shouldn't say that. It's going to go back and forth, where at times, if the election were today, for example, Hillary would win. If it was last week, Donald Trump would have won. You're going to have that yo-yo back and forth. With Bernie, you wouldn't have had that. You just wouldn't have had it. The polls had him in a landslide across the board. In swing states is where he did the best against Donald Trump. You undercut all of Trump's good arguments against Hillary if you had Bernie Sanders as our nominee. Because what's he going to say about Hillary? Crooked Hillary. Crooked Hillary, corrupt, bought by Wall Street, voted for the wars, voted for the trade deals. You can't use that argument against Bernie Sanders. He didn't vote for the wars. He didn't vote for the trade deals. He's not corrupt. So what are you going to say? How are you going to argue against fucking Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump? You can't. You can't do it. You can't do it. So that's why he was landsliding his punk ass. The Democrats said, he's the weaker general election candidate. Are you kidding me? She's the most electable. Now that they need him, oops, the truth comes out. Bernie, please help us. You know what? Fuck you. Fuck you. You know who Bernie Sanders is helping? Russ Feingold. You know why he's helping Russ Feingold? Russ Feingold is an actual progressive. He's an actual liberal. So you know what Bernie's going to do? He's going to pick the people who are actually liberal and actually progressive, and he's going to go, I'm going to help them. And then the establishment people are going to come to him, and he's going to say, how about you take a long walk off a short pier? And I'm happy he says that, because establishment Democrats have not earned Bernie Sanders' support for these Senate races, because we can try to build from the ground up with the point we're at right now, where he started this program to get get new Bernie Sanders into politics, get more people who are political independents or registered Democrats but are actually progressive. He fought for these people to get involved now, and they are getting involved. So those are the people who are going to get our support, because that's what the political revolution is actually about. And now we know the Democratic Party was lying all along. Oh, weak general election candidate, slash the best general election candidate, which is why we need you in swing states. Please help us, Bernie. Okay. Okay. Now we are going to go to President Obama. And I know some of you are thinking, good Obama or bad Obama? Answer, good Obama. Yesterday we covered bad Obama with his talk on the TPP. Today we cover good Obama. So there's that. President Obama just took a giant step in the right direction on the issue of criminal justice. Ryan Riley reports here. Obama on Wednesday commuted the sentences of 214 federal prisoners who were incarcerated on drug charges. The White House said the announcement meant Obama had commuted 562 sentences, more than the past nine presidents combined. Of that group, 67 had been given life sentences. The White House said the 214 number was the highest number of commutations announced in a single day since at least the year 1900. And then they continue here and say, former Attorney General Eric Holder has said he expected as many as 10,000 prisoners to be granted clemency. Wow. Wow. So, you guys know I'm tough on Obama when I think he deserves it. We did this segment yesterday where he's doubling down on TPP. That's disastrous for all the reasons I laid out. And you should check out that segment if you haven't seen it. Whenever he makes bad decisions, I'm going to continue to go after him. When he makes good decisions, you got to give him credit. I love the Cuba deal. That was fantastic. I love the Iran nuclear deal. That was fantastic. I love the immigration executive order. That was great. That was blocked by a court, which is ridiculous because he's just copying Reagan's executive order on immigration. But I love that move. There are many things he's done in the second term, but yes, even some things in the first term where you got to give credit where credit is due. It's a nuanced picture. He's got many upsides. He's got many downsides. This is one that's a fantastic upside. So 562 people, I believe the number was. Yes, 562 people. He's commuted sentences. These are nonviolent drug offenders. And I hope, all I could say is I hope Eric Holder is right when Eric Holder says, I think he actually plans on releasing as many as 10,000 prisoners. Dude, keep going. Keep going. This is 100% correct. And you know what this shows me? At least on some level, he's not an utter brazen hypocrite. Like Bill Clinton, for example, was a brazen hypocrite. Bill Clinton, obviously he had done drugs. Obviously he had smoked weed. He may have even done cocaine. Who knows? But here's a guy who did it himself, and then the drug wars happened under him and unfolded under him, and they exacerbate it, and he doesn't give a fuck. Well, jackass, if you were caught when you were younger, I mean, how would you like your life to be ruined over the fact that you smoked a joint? You wouldn't, right? But now you don't care about doing that to people across the country. Well, President Obama, he was part of the Choom gang. Remember that? Or he's open about the fact he smoked weed. And, you know, everybody thought, and I certainly did too in the first term, what a fucking hypocrite, because you actually had drug raids that were increasing. You had more of a crackdown. So everybody's like, what the fuck? We wanted the liberal guy. It looks like they're going in a more conservative direction. Well, they jammed on the brakes, slammed on the brakes. Jam sounds weird. And now they're going in the opposite direction. Now they're like, shit, let's try to release like 10,000 of these people. Dude, go further. I would release every single nonviolent drug offender today. Yeah, you heard me say it. And you want to know why? It's not because people would paint that, oh, my God, radical, you're so radical. No, you're radical if you don't do it. Because you're just brainwashed by the current society to think that this is a legitimate course of action in the first place, when it's not. So, for example, if I knocked down your door and arrested your brother, let's say, because your brother was drinking a Monster Energy and I gave him a few years in jail, how would you feel about it? You say that's the craziest thing you've ever fucking seen, right? You say that's stupid. Like, you're a stupid person if you're in favor of that system. You're a barbarian. You're a savage. This is immoral. This is wrong. It's wrong. What are you doing? Why is it any different for fucking cocaine? Now, I get it. Cocaine is much stronger than Monster Energy. But they're both drugs that alter your consciousness. Red Bull's a drug that alters your consciousness. Caffeine's a drug that alters your consciousness. You go to the doctor, get some Xanax, get some Percocet. That alters your consciousness. Alcohol. Alcohol is perfectly legal. There are many social ills tied to that, but now we understand, hey, bitch, freedom. What are you going to do? You're going to punish 80 to 90% of people who drink alcohol moderately and have no problems because 10 to 20% of people may have some issues? No, you give the people with the issues help, treat it like a medical problem, and everybody else can do what the fuck they want. All of a sudden that mindset changes when it's cocaine. All of a sudden that mindset changes when it's marijuana. Why? Why? Well, those are legal, those are illegal. But why? Why should it be? That's not an argument. Oh, that's how it is. That's not an argument. You're just restating what is, not why it should be that way. So you got to let people do what they're going to do. And if, honestly, if they do self-harm, they do self-harm. There's a million ways to do self-harm. I could go eat McDonald's every meal of every day until I die of a heart attack at age 42. Totally legal. But somehow now we're going to judge people who decide I'm going to shoot up heroin and die when they're 42. And by the way, look, you can make a moral judgment on that and say, look, I want to help you. I want to try to help you. And that's a fair thing to do, of course. But when you say, no, now you're a criminal and I'm going to lock you up for choosing to do that, well, no, now you're the asshole. Now you're the bigger asshole. So we should keep that in perspective. Credit to Obama for continuing to release all of the nonviolent drug offenders. Go all the way, man. Release all of the nonviolent drug offenders. Here's the thing. They're not really criminals. They're not. It takes a specific kind of person to want to steal somebody's shit. It takes a specific kind of person to want to do physical harm to somebody. Those people are not in the same category as the people who want to get high. I'd argue most people at one point or another want to get high. You want to get a little drunk on Friday night. You want to get a little high. You want to get a little upper in you. You want to get a little downer in you. You know, whatever. Some people are into psychedelics. I'm not. I'm scared to death of taking those things. But some people are into them. By all means, I'm not judging you. Some people want to do that. So, but that's not a criminal. That's called a person. That's a normal person. So when we conflate these things, somebody who does a substance with somebody who beats up a grandma and steals her purse, we're being so intellectually sloppy that it's comical. So thank you, Obama, for releasing these people. And continue to do it. And the more you do it, the more I'm going to come out here and defend you. And the more other people are going to defend you too. Because it's the right thing. I don't give a fuck about those dumbass knuckle-dragging Republicans who are going to say, Obama released the criminal. Them criminal bad people. Oh, look at what he's doing. Releasing all the criminals. Shut the fuck up. It fucking peanut gallery over here. Go play with your own feces in the corner. You're not at the table with the adults here. So I don't give a fuck about them. Obama, they're going to attack you anyway. No matter what you do, they're going to attack you. So since they're going to attack you no matter what, just do the right thing. Free them all. All right, now we go to George W. Bush. So President George W. Bush did a speaking gig in Ohio for Senator Rob Portman, and he apparently attempted to rip Donald Trump without bringing up Donald Trump by name. This is a very artful thing he tried to do here because, for those of you who don't know, George W. Bush has said he's maintained from when he left office, I don't want to get involved. I don't want to be involved in what's happening with the presidency. I don't want to necessarily be involved in the races, although, if I'm not mistaken, I think they endorsed Mitt Romney. But as a general rule, like, I think when they asked him to critique Obama over a certain thing, he was like, I kind of like to stay out of it. And he says that's because I was president, I know what it's like to get all that scrutiny, yada, yada, so I'm going to respect the office and not say anything. It may just be because he doesn't fucking follow the news and he doesn't know what to say when he's asked to comment because he's a little bit of a dunce. But I digress. So according to attendees, he warned against the following, quote, isolationism, nativism, and protectionism, and urged the GOP to ensure that, quote, everyone feels welcome. Now, as I read this, I thought it was pretty curious, because some of this, some of what George W. Bush is saying is part of the problem. Some of it's the answer, and he's right. Other parts are the problem. So he lumps in isolationism, nativism, and protectionism all in one bin as like, oh, these are all bad, so bad. And then he also adds, we should make everyone feel welcome. So Bush is right about, hey, the increase in nativism and the increase in everyone not feeling welcome, bad idea. He's right about that, because what he's saying is stop being so openly xenophobic, stop being so openly bigoted. This is what he's saying to Trump. Now, there's a little bit of an element of hypocrisy, because naturally the neoconservatives and Republicans for the longest time, they ran the Southern strategy, but what they did is they were more coded in their bigotry and their xenophobia. So, you know, they wouldn't just come out and say, Mexicans, they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people, but they're criminals and rapists. They wouldn't say shit like that. It would be much more coded in how they go about painting that we're on Team White Guy and minorities, they're all right. But he's still right to say this guy's going crazy. Nativism and is the problem, and making everyone not feel welcome, just attacking, you know, Muslims, even going to the extent of questioning the family of the Muslim soldier who died fighting for the United States. Even Bush recognizes, whoa, big guy. So that's where Bush is right. Where's Bush wrong? Dude, you're lumping in isolationism, as you call it, and protectionism with nativism. No, nativism is clearly, you know, a xenophobic, bigoted thing where it's like our in-group, out-group mentality, tribalism, we're better than you. Isolationism is the pejorative term people use to smear the very popular idea of non-interventionism. In other words, don't fight wars all over the fucking place for no goddamn reason. So you're lumping in minding our business and only using our military for self-defense with a xenophobic, bigoted movement? Police your tongue, boy. What are you doing? Are you kidding me? And then protectionism. So in other words, when Trump rips the TPP, when Trump rips NAFTA, when Trump rips permanent normal trade relations with China and the WTO, when he rips the outsourcing deal, Bush is lumping in that with the xenophobia and the bigotry. Again, George, see, this is why you're partly the problem, because the Republican establishment and the Democratic establishment have agreed for the longest time, all right, protectionism bad, non-interventionism bad, right? Right, all agreed. When the population has been telling you, no, you're wrong. Protectionism is actually kind of good. Why is it good? We won't lose our jobs as much if we don't do stupid deals. This is a race to the bottom we're doing. Yeah, it's. I love how that became like how words become, that's not the right way to phrase it, how words begin to have a positive connotation or a negative connotation is so strange, right? Like when people say, like welfare, the term welfare, like, oh, fucking welfare. Would you do not want to look out for the welfare of your children? How about your parents? You care about their welfare, right? But now when it's your neighbor, you're like, fucking welfare. I should care about the welfare of my neighbor. Same thing with this. Protectionism. Fucking protectionism. Yeah, again, so I pose the question. Do you want to not protect your kids? Do you want to not protect your parents? So why is it different for your neighbor or the guy down the block? Don't you want to protect him? Yeah, you should. Protect their jobs. And this isn't to say, hey, fuck all the other countries. It's to say, I'm not going to take good-paying U.S. jobs and send it to some second or third world country where you pay 37 cents an hour for some fucking 8-year-old kid to do the work. I'm not down with that because I don't want to be part of this oppression, and I don't want to take the jobs away from people who are making middle-class, wages here. So, but this is what they do. They muddy the waters. We all agree, establishment, right? Protectionism, bad. And isolationism, bad. No, non-interventionism, which is the normal term for isolationism, the pejorative smear, that's good. Don't fuck with people and only use our military if they fuck with us. And protectionism is good. Let's make sure we keep middle-class jobs here. And when you conflate those things with out-and-out bigotry and nativism and everybody not feeling welcome, you're part of the problem. Because then people go, hey, the Republican establishment and the Democratic establishment seem to agree. Outsource all the jobs and get more wars. We, the people, don't agree. So then many people turn to Trump, and Trump also has the massive downsides of not really meaning it when he says, let's be non-interventionist and let's be protectionist, and also just being a massive xenophobe and a bigot and an unhinged person, and you don't know how bad he could possibly be. But this is why I say, yes, the establishment is at least partly responsible for the rise of Donald Trump. Okay. All right, let's continue. I'm going to do one more, and then we'll take a break, and I'll come back and wrap up the show for you in a nice, neat little bow with a bunch more stories. All right, let's go to Joe Scarborough. Joe Scarborough of MSNBC made a bone-chilling claim on his show about Donald Trump yesterday. Let's watch.
Follow up with that, and I'll be very careful here. Several months ago, a foreign policy expert on the international level went to advise Donald Trump, and three times he asked about the use of nuclear weapons. Three times he asked, at one point, if we have them, why can't we use them? That's one of the reasons why he just doesn't have foreign policy experts around
Trump.
Him.
Trump asked three times.
Three times in an hour briefing, why can't we use nuclear weapons? What's that?
Be careful, America, and be careful, Republican leaders.
All right, now understand it is Joe Scarborough. Joe Scarborough is known to say things that are total and utter bullshit at other times. But do I think there's a grain of truth in the story? Now, maybe I'm wrong, but Trump has made other comments about nuclear weapons that are kind of flippant. You know, there's probably about 10 examples in the media at different times in debates where, or not debates, excuse me. Well, one time in a debate where he didn't know what the nuclear triad was, but in a town hall with Chris Matthews, where Chris Matthews was like, Can you take using nukes off the table? He's like, no. He's like, okay, but so what do you mean? Like, you would maybe nuke somebody? He's like, yeah. He's like, okay, what about Europe? Can you take using them against Europe off the table? He's like, no. He's like, Europe? Trump's like, yeah, no, I can't take anything off the table. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not going to take anything off the table. Who says that? When you look at Trump, there's one thing that even people who don't despise him agree with the people who do despise him on. Kind of impulsive, kind of thin-skinned, kind of a loose cannon, kind of a wild card. That's why it's not surprising to hear that it's possible that in meetings with experts, there are a few instances where he's like, and anyway, yeah, but nukes. We talk about nukes. So what's the deal with that? He's like, well, you know, we'd like to never use them ever because of that. If you do that, it may be a world extinction scenario because of how many nukes there are in existence, how many different countries have them, the response attacks that would happen as a result of it, nuclear winter and the fallout. Right, but so we have them. So if we make them, why can't we use them? I do think there's a grain of truth in this, and it's fucking scary. And one of the main things I said from the beginning is, I don't trust that guy with nukes. I don't trust him with the army. I just don't. And that's not to say I do trust Hillary Clinton with those things. I don't trust her with them either. And I have good reason not to trust her with them either. Her fucking record. So let's be clear about that. But this is a matter of spectrum and degrees. And this is a matter of, like I've said from the beginning, when it's Trump and Hillary and you're limited to just that, you are having a conversation of lesser of two evils. Who's the lesser of two evils? And on the day Donald Trump gets elected, I would be more scared than on the day Hillary Clinton gets elected. And I don't think that's irrational. I don't. I don't think that's irrational at all. And imagine for a second that there's not just a grain of truth in Scarborough's story. Imagine for a second it's just true. Isn't that a little chilling? That this fucking reality star buffoon who notoriously has thin skin might have the nuclear launch codes and might have an army. But then also, let me add this as a final point on this. Let's veer in the other direction because I think this is important. I would like the establishment to make up their mind, though, because last week they were talking about how, oh, Donald Trump, he's an agent of Vladimir Putin, and the problem is he doesn't want to escalate with Vladimir Putin more. The problem is he doesn't want to do war over Crimea and over Estonia and over Lithuania. The problem is, see, Hillary Clinton, she's tough, and she would do a standoff with Vladimir Putin and maybe escalate to World War III. It's fantastic. Whereas Trump, with all his business dealings with Russia, I mean, look, he's going soft on Crimea. He doesn't want to do a standoff. He doesn't want to go to war. So, okay, which is it, establishment? Which is it? Either you're mad that he's not hawkish enough. Oh, my God, look at what he's doing with Russia, and he's so weak, and he's on Team Russia, and he wants to let them take more land, and he doesn't want to escalate. Either that's the argument, or it's the argument he's too hawkish and, oh, he's so crazy he might use nukes. They're trying to use contradictory arguments at the same time, you know. And they do, I mean, they do the same thing with Syria, for example. Remember when Trump was like, I want to stay out of Syria. I don't want to be in Syria. Let Vladimir Putin fight in Syria. I'm done. I want to get out of there. It was like, oh, scandal, how dare you say that? But wait, which is it? Because then if he says, and he does say this at times too, because he's Donald Trump and he contradicts himself every 8 seconds, I want to get involved in Syria. Then people go, oh, fucking Trump wants to get involved in Syria, war hawk, crazy person. No, which is it? You can't have it both ways. Which is it? Are you mad at him for being too hawkish, or are you mad at him for not being hawkish enough? So there's definitely some establishment bullshit here. You sniff it, you go, something's funky, something's off. But having said that and pointing out the establishment's hypocrisy, because it's there, and by the way, they were talking to a notorious neocon general in that clip with Joe Scarborough, and I don't trust that guy for a split second. But having said that, this is an original concern I had going all the way back to when Trump became the nominee, and you guys can see the segments and you can hear me talk about it. Yes, I am concerned about a guy who's that fucking big of a loose cannon and that unstable having nuclear weapons. And if that story is true about the flippant, like, yeah, why can't we use them? I'm not surprised, but I do think we should all fear that. All right, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson did a town hall. I got a clip for you on that. And then also, Trump's VP pick on the floor of Congress. Oh, boy, what a goofball and what a moron. All right, stay right there. We'll be right back.
Suck. Cause when I see this shit, more ooze and it's skipping my little move. As a regular, they gone for giving thanks to gifts. You think that bandana makes you a gangster? All I see is the handkerchief. Nigga, there's no one out to click that Jesus. Believe that, cause I ain't scared of shit but Jesus. Flip doors on room with the poodles. Listen, I'm eating alone and you eating alone the noodles. Your boy is corrupt, kid. Banks is gonna do me the store and pour a piece of cheesecake like Puff did. You chumps can't afford these homes. Walk around, I got 40 cones. I went down, that's 40 stones. And it's only in a necklace. I'm Tony and I'm reckless. Tony and a Lexus. I'm fresh off the gutter. Scrap what your man thought. I'm in the hood with more scraps than a chance for it.
Of a bitch. We're back. Okay, let's do it. And actually, as I'm talking to you, I got to pull up a fact where I forgot the exact number. Sorry about that. I like to be prepared, but sometimes I'm not, bitch. let's see. Oh, my God. I can't believe that number is real. Oh, sweet Jesus. What are we doing? What are we doing with our lives? Shit. Okay. I can't believe that. That's unbelievable. Okay. Sorry. I'm already running through the story in my head, and I haven't even shared it with you yet. Where are my goddamn manners? All right. Here we go. And actually, I need to get my clip ready for this, too. Boom. Libertarian candidate for president Gary Johnson had a town hall yesterday on CNN, and he weighed in on the war in Afghanistan.
Would have gone in after Osama bin Laden, and after 7 months, we defeated Al-Qaeda. We should have gotten out. We should have gotten out with the caveat that we'll come back if Osama bin Laden raises his head, and that I think we should get out of Afghanistan now. And as difficult as that will be, the consequences being, you could argue, will be horrible. Those same consequences are going to exist 20 years from now, if that's when we decide to get out, or for some that will just stay there forever.
So even if it means the Taliban coming back, you still say get out of Afghanistan?
Well, the Taliban is there, and I think we're kidding ourselves if we think that hanging around there forever, unless we plan to be there forever.
Okay. Thank you, Gary Johnson, for finally saying something that nobody ever dared to say in the political landscape in America in a position like you have. This is something that I've been arguing for the longest time with my fucking hair on fire, and the best we got from most Democrats was, you know, Afghanistan. Afghanistan, we should draw down. That's what we should do. Just vague. Like, oh, wouldn't it be great, theoretically, if we can philosophically maybe just take down the number of troops? Yeah, and that, yay, anti-war. That's the best we got from the Democrats. Here you have a guy who's like, yeah, how about we get out now? How about that? That wacky idea. So, he also goes on to say there he disagrees with regime change, and he thinks that, by and large, regime change has led to more problems than it solved. Another area where Gary Johnson is 100% correct. And to be clear, this is the upside of libertarians. I agree almost 100% with libertarians on foreign policy, 100% with libertarians on social issues, including drug legalization. Obviously, we have some major differences on economic issues, but it's nice to have this kind of voice in the landscape because it's important. And again, very few people, maybe nobody, is making this case. So think about it. In Afghanistan, there are more Taliban now than there were when we invaded in 2001. So that's it. The war has been a failure. Any reasonable metric, it's a failure. Because your whole idea was, okay, first we got to get Al-Qaeda. Like Gary Johnson said, we got Al-Qaeda like that in Afghanistan. But then they just said, yeah, well, while we're there, fuck these Taliban dudes too, because they kind of covered for Al-Qaeda and gave them a place to stay. So we stayed there and we fought the Taliban. Now, if we were to win on that front, what would have happened? Fewer Taliban. Now, not only are there more Taliban people, they control a bigger portion of the country than they did when we invaded. I've never seen a bigger fail than that. I've never seen a bigger fail than that. So your idea hasn't worked. We've been at war there for 15 years. You're like, I swear, the 16th year, but maybe on the 17th or 18th, we're really going to have that breakthrough we've been waiting for. Totally. And then the other point is, whenever we leave, it's going to go to shit. If you rip off the Band-Aid now, it's going to go to shit. If you rip off the Band-Aid in 23 years, it's going to go to shit. If you rip off the Band-Aid in 100 years, it's going to go to shit. Why are you wasting U.S. lives and resources? We can't even get fucking clean water in Flint. And your dumbass has spent, and I'm not kidding about this number, $65 billion building up the Afghani military. We have homelessness. Homelessness. Hundreds of thousands of people homeless in the United States of America. We don't have clean water. We have crumbling schools and crumbling infrastructure. Our infrastructure gets a grade of D from the Civil Society of Engineers. And what are we doing with our funds? I don't know. Throw $65 billion into a black hole in Afghanistan to build up their shitty-ass military, and now the Taliban controls more of the country than they did when we went in. He's 100% right. Look, it's just, it's not going to work. Your war is not going to work. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. You're wasting money. You're wasting U.S. lives. Spend that money here. Rebuild our country. Do the right thing. We're under this illusion, and we have the delusion that, oh, we're just going to make everything better. No, you're not going to make everything better. And, oh, yeah, a lot of people got rich off these wars, too. I don't mean to get all conspiratorial on you, and I'm not saying this is the sole motivation behind doing what we do. But, yes, a lot of people got very rich off this. Yes, Afghanistan has a lot of minerals. Yes, they have an opium crop. Yes, those things are factors. Again, not the sole factor, but a factor. Isn't it funny the main argument we use right now as to why we should stay in Afghanistan is, I mean, the Taliban, they're going to implement Sharia, and we need to protect human rights. So that's why we're there. Altruism. We care about the people. We can't have them living under Sharia. Funny, that's your take in Afghanistan. What's your take in Brunei? They just implemented Sharia in 2014. They're our ally. What did you do after they implemented Sharia? Invited them into the TPP. So they can get more money and more resources. This isn't about altruism. This isn't about human rights. This is a misguided, stupid war. Get out today. All right, let's go to Mike Pence. Some new video emerged, thanks to Right Wing Watch, of Donald Trump's idiot VP pick arguing against evolution in Congress.
...1925, in the famous Scopes Monkey Trial, this theory made its way through litigation into the classrooms of America, and we all have seen the consequence over the last 77 years. Evolution not taught as a sincere theory of biologists, but rather, Mr. Speaker, taught as fact. And lest anyone listening in would doubt that, we can all see in our mind's eye that grade room classroom we all grew up in with the linear depiction of evolution just above the chalkboard. There's the little monkey crawling on the grass. There's the Neanderthal with his knuckles dragging, and then there's Mel Gibson standing in all of his glory. It is what we have been taught Well, the truth is, it always was a theory, Mr. Speaker. And now that we've recognized evolution as a theory, I would simply and humbly ask, can we teach it as such? And can we also consider teaching other theories of the origin of species, like the theory that was believed in by every signer of the Declaration of Independence? Every signer of the Declaration of Independence believed that men and women were created and were endowed by that same Creator with certain unalienable rights. The Bible tells us that God created man in his own image, male and female, he created them. And I believe that, Mr. Speaker. I believe that God created the known universe, the earth and everything in it, including man. And I also believe that someday scientists will come to see that only the theory of intelligent design provides even a remotely rational explanation for the known universe. But until that day comes, and I have no fear of science, I believe that the more we study the science, the more the truths of faith will become apparent. I just would humbly ask, as new theories of evolution find their ways into the newspapers and into the textbooks, let us demand that educators around America teach evolution not as fact, but as theory, and an interesting theory to boot. But let's also bring into the minds of all of our children all of the theories about the unknowable that some bright day in the future, through science and perhaps through faith, we will find the truth of from whence we come. And I yield back.
I can't believe that people this ignorant have this much power. And you heard him at the end. Well, yeah, Mr. Speaker, let's teach all the theories. That's what we need to do. Do you really want to teach all the theories? Is that what you want to do? Okay. When do we start teaching the Quran in science class? All of a sudden, did I say all the theories? I meant the one I like. And that's it. Yeah, please. When we start having a conversation about Vishnu, when we start having a conversation about Muhammad, when we start having a conversation about Greek gods or Roman gods or tribal gods of the Amazon or Native American interpretation of gods or paganism or Scientology, all of a sudden, oh, come on now. That's obviously not true. We can leave those off. Oh, right. So as Richard Dawkins brilliantly said, you're an atheist when it comes to all the other gods of the different religions except your own. By the way, this is Mike Pence on good behavior. You're like, hold on now, what? Yeah, no, he believes in creationism. Here he softened it for the Congressional Record. So what did he say? Oh, I believe in intelligent design. Intelligent design is the slightly less stupid version of creationism. Because creationism is just overtly biblical. The world is 6,000 years old, and it was Adam and Eve in a garden with a fucking snake in a bush and yada yada. Whereas intelligent design is just, evolution happened, see, aren't we reasonable? But there are gaps, and where there were gaps, God came in and he was like, alakazam, alakazoo, magic wand, doodly-doo, and then boom, he fixed everything. And then, oh, okay, so see, before the monkey didn't have a rib because there was a missing thing in the fossil record, now the monkey has a fucking rib because God. How did the fish eventually walk on land? How do you explain that gap? Jesus, bitch, God, that's how you explain it. You're so stupid. And he also, let's be clear about this, has no clue what the word theory means in the context of science. He keeps saying it like it's theory as you and I use it in casual conversation as non-scientists. No, theory in the scientific world is like saying fact. Theory like me and you use in casual conversation, that word in the scientific world is hypothesis. So this dipshit doesn't understand basic science terminology and doesn't understand that when you say theory in the scientific realm, that means fact! He's like, yeah, it's a theory, and we should teach all the theories. I just made up a theory right now. The world was created when Brock Lesnar's ancestors farted it into existence. Some of you are like, who's Brock Lesnar, and why are we talking about farts? I agree on both counts. I barely know who Brock Lesnar is, a UFC fighter, WWE fighter. But, okay, I can make up a theory, and it doesn't mean dick. Flying Spaghetti Monster is made up. It doesn't mean dick. We made those up now, so it's obviously ridiculous. All the other theories from religion were just made up the same way, just further back by a bunch of idiots in a desert before they knew anything about science and anything about viruses and bacteria and germs and any of that shit. So it's amazing that people this stupid are in positions of power in the United States. And this is a guy who said, we covered this story yesterday, Rush Limbaugh is the reason why I'm here. It was Rush Limbaugh's career that led to my career, and now I'm here. And then there he is, ranting against science in Congress, saying we should teach intelligent design alongside evolution. No, evolution is fact, a.k.a. scientific theory, and it's the only game in town when it comes to the explanation of how we are who we are, however the fuck you say it, and all the other ones are made up and not connected to reality and religious, mythical garbage. You might try to clean it up a little bit when you move from creationism to intelligent design, but at the end of the day, it's equally untrue, and it's about as legitimate as saying, hey, let's teach the stork theory on how babies come into existence in science class, along with, you know, reproduction and pregnancy and stuff like that. Or not. Okay. A white nationalist radio host named James Edwards has a show called The Political Cesspool, and he has some thoughts for us here on the election.
I will tell you this, though. Talking about Hillary Clinton and radical feminism, should Hillary Clinton be president of the United States? Under God's law, a woman should not even have dominion over her household.
Oh.
There are natural roles and abilities that men and women have. Together,
God ordained.
That are God ordained, and together they are complementary of one another, and together a man and a woman can raise a family.
They're not supposed to be competitive or competitors with one another.
Well, all of that's true, but I'm just saying, and I'm not saying the husband is the ruler of the house under God's law, and that's the law that I abide by. So, you know, should Hillary Clinton have dominion over the country?
Over the national house, so to speak.
There you go. Good, very good. Now, you say, well, let's get into this hypothetical thing. Would you take Ann Coulter as president over George Bush or Barack Obama? Well, of course I would take Ann Coulter over president. But at the same time, would this country be better, frankly, if women didn't even vote?
These guys are really intelligent, let me tell you. So first of all, I love the, well, God's law, we got to talk about God's law, and under God's law, women can't even have dominion over the house. You got to leave it up to us men, because we're so bright. He goes on to bring that up. He kind of cuts himself off at one point, but he basically goes on to make the argument, like, you know how women are, they're all emotional and unintelligent. Right, whereas you, on the other hand, are a genius. I mean, I could hear from listening to you. Super high IQ, bro. Super high IQ. This reminds me of, like, it's the same thing with the white supremacists and white nationalists. And to be clear, this guy actually is a white nationalist. Where they're so convinced that white people are superior to all other races. But meanwhile, they are the living proof that indeed that is not true. Like, you have the goofballs in the fucking KKK wearing dresses and bibs and a costume, adults wearing costumes, fucking drooling on themselves, sipping beer, farting, saying all these stupid, unintellectual, bullshit theories as they claim to be superior. Hey, jackass, you're living proof that you're not superior. The race obviously is not superior. It has people like you in it. So, but it's the same thing here. You know, men are so much better, and women can't even have dominion over the household. They can't get their shit together enough to do that. Whereas me, on the other hand, I got this shit here on lock. No, you don't. And also the you know, talking about God's law. Just change the context and every right-winger on the planet loses their shit. God's law. Allahu Akbar. Oh, my God, it's creeping Sharia. When it's creeping Christian Sharia, they're like, no, I love that. That one's awesome. The other one, bad. No, they're both bad. And then understand something. And here's the point of me doing this story. Obviously, he's a loathsome human being saying women shouldn't vote. Women can't vote, whatever. And no woman shouldn't lead the country. Dude, this guy is credentialed by Trump's campaign. So he's allowed to be the press that follows his campaign all around and asks questions and all that stuff. Now, on that alone, I wouldn't hold that against Trump, and I mean that because I believe in freedom of speech and I believe in freedom of the press to the point where if I was running for something, I don't give a fuck if you're a far, super far right outlet or super far left outlet. I don't give a fuck. You can cover my campaign. That's my take on it. That is not Trump's take on it. Here's the problem. Trump allows this guy and credentials this guy, but he does not credential the Daily Beast, the Washington Post, the Des Moines Register, Fusion, Univision, BuzzFeed, Politico, the National Review, and many, many others. Those are also other right-wing outlets and left-wing outlets and centrist establishment-y outlets, but they were all a little bit critical of Trump at one point or another because it's their fucking job in the media. And he's like, banished, gone. This is the guy who believes in the Constitution and free speech and free expression and freedom of the press? This is the guy who says that all the time? This is the guy who's supposed to be against the PC crowd? No, you're a right-wing social justice warrior. You ban people you don't like from your fucking press pool. You took away credentials from Politico and gave it to a white nationalist radio show who believed that women cannot lead a country and shouldn't be able to vote. That does say a lot about the Trump campaign. Okay. So Clint Eastwood sat down for an interview with Esquire about a new movie he's in, and they wandered into politics. Uh-oh. So here's what he said about the election. Trump's onto something, because secretly everybody's getting tired of political correctness, kissing up. That's the kiss-ass generation we're in right now. We're really in a pussy generation. Everybody's walking on eggshells. We see people accusing people of being racist and all kinds of stuff. When I grew up, those things weren't called racist. Okay. I love this story because it actually is the perfect example of misplaced anger. Now, is there a genuine problem, and are there genuine concerns about, yes, I've said it a million times and I've done countless segments on it. If you want to talk about safe spaces on college campuses, if you want to talk about microaggressions, if you want to talk about, you know, the movement that we can call legitimately the authoritarian left that really wants to censor and ban things that they don't like and if it hurts their feelings and, you know, they're basically over-emotional and they don't care about actual real substantive political issues like health care and a living wage and things of that nature, that exists and I'm against that. But what we're finding now is many, many people on the right are using that umbrella and that blanket of, oh, I'm just not politically correct, to shield themselves from any and all legitimate criticism. So Donald Trump comes out and he says, yeah, the Mexicans, they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people. So he flips it. In other words, if he had said, some are bad people, some are criminals and rapists, but most are good people, then that's fine. Nobody would disagree with that. But he flipped it. He said, they're rapists. I assume some are good people, implying the majority are bad people. So he comes out, he says that. He advocates for deporting 11 million undocumented immigrants. 11 million. And he ain't talking about Hans and Sven. You know. He's talking about Juan and Julio. You know. So he does that, and then he advocates banning all Muslims from entering the United States of America. Well, Clint, as much as I love your movies, bro, I gotta ask you, if that's not xenophobia and bigotry, what the fuck is xenophobia and bigotry? What, does he have to come out there and start screaming the N-word at the top of his lungs? Is that what he has to do? I mean, how much further do you want to go? He says, kick out all undocumented immigrants, They're criminals, they're rapists, and ban all Muslims from entering the country. The idea that anybody could twist that into, well, in my day, that wasn't bigotry. Yeah, because in your fucking day, people were much more bigoted. And then we fought back against it, and then we had an equilibrium where it was like, okay, now if you are a genuine bigot, you do get shamed. Now, again, are there misfirings? Sometimes are people wrongly accused of being bigots and racists and this and that? Of course, of course. And I'm against that college PC culture mentality, as I've said a trillion times. But you can't then turn around and do the opposite wrong, where you now use the banner of I'm just being politically incorrect to say things that aren't true, to say things that are stupid. So the real problem here is Clint Eastwood. The funny thing is, look who's getting all butthurt as you're accusing other people of being too butthurt. Yeah, Trump's onto something. Secretly, everybody's getting too politically correct. Kissing up. Get off my lawn. That's the kiss-ass pussy generation that we're in. Everybody's walking on eggshells. We see people accusing people of being racist. Wee, wee, wee. I'm a little bitch. Fucking Clint Eastwood as I accuse everybody else of being too sensitive. No, you're the too sensitive one. You're the too sensitive one. People make genuine criticisms that make sense against Trump, and you go into defense mode. Why are you so defensive? Okay. Okay, more. I got to squeeze in two more stories, guys, so if I go a little bit over here, it is what it is, bitch. Okay. The Independent detailed a cringeworthy is not a word I'm too good at, apparently. The Independent detailed a cringeworthy story from Afghanistan here. They report, an Afghan cleric has defended his marriage to a six-year-old girl, saying she was a religious offering to him. Muhammad Karim, who is believed to be in his 60s, was arrested after marrying the girl. He has also told officials that he had been given the girl as a religious offering by her parents. However, her parents reportedly claim she was abducted without their consent. Head of the Women Affairs Department, Masoom Anwari, said, "This girl does not speak, but only repeats one thing. I am afraid of this man." Jesus, man, it's 2016 and I have to really do this segment right now. It is not okay for 60-year-old men to marry and fuck 6-year-old girls. What the fuck is wrong with people on this planet that we live on? It's not okay. And I love how he makes an argument that he thinks makes it okay. She was a religious offering. She was a religious offering. I don't give a fuck. That's not a counter argument. Okay, look, fine. I went to next door to my neighbor and knock on the door, and I shot his fucking son in the head. It's cool. It was a religious offering. The father said, we're doing a child sacrifice. Kill my kid. So I went over there. I killed him. What are you going to do? Religious offering. It's cool. Everybody go home. Everybody go home. No, don't go home. Lock that motherfucker up. That's not a counter-argument. And the only environment in which anybody could think this has any legitimacy, and there are people who are going to think that has legitimacy in the region who are super fundamentalists, is an environment where people misconstrue things and they say, I have religious freedom and my religious freedom goes so far as to take away the human rights and the actual freedoms of other human beings. It doesn't go that far. It doesn't go that far. If you want to be a backwards fundamentalist religious dingbat and fuck over your own life and ruin yourself and have an ideology where your head's up your ass, by all means, I'm not going to stop you. But the second you start doing shit like marrying a six-year-old girl, doing fucking human sacrifice, saying that other people have to abide by your religion. No, no, no. You're the fucking problem. You're the problem. Obviously, a six-year-old can't consent. They don't even know what the fuck they're consenting to. You captured, kidnapped a human being, and probably raped her as well. You're the problem. You're the bad person. Fuck off with your bullshit reasoning of, it's my religion. I don't give a fuck if it's your religion. Okay. And finally, Medical Daily is reporting on an important breakthrough in the area of mental health. They explain here, in a medical first, scientists believe that they have found several genes thought to be associated with severe depression. The study, carried out by Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, scoured the genomes of 450,000 people in order to uncover 17 genes associated with significantly increased risk for developing depression. This finding not only gives researchers a better idea of the underlying cause of the condition, but may even help us better treat it. Now, in total, the study identified 17 genetic variations spread over 15 regions of the genome, which are associated with severe clinical depression in individuals of European descent. And to be clear, out of that 450,000 people, I think 75,000 had severe depression in this study. So, okay, this is a big breakthrough, and it's a big breakthrough because it can now help us remove the stigma against mental health issues that currently exists. So as of right now, it's a fairly common thing that people feel like, oh, they don't want to come out of the closet with their depression or with their mental health issues because they fear that people will judge them as having a character flaw or having some sort of personal moral failing. And what this shows is, at least in the case of severe depression, it's not your fault. It's not like you made poor decisions, which then led to the feelings of depression. What they're saying is it's genetic. So if it's genetic, it is mostly the case that it is what it is. You are who you are. You just got a bad roll of the dice, and that's how you feel. And then basically we can treat it like a brain disease. We can treat it like a biological issue. If you have strep throat, nobody says to you, come on, man, but, you know, pep yourself up here. Go out there. Get some sunlight. Go for a walk. It'll be great. You can get out of this thing. Nobody says that because that'd be ignorant as a motherfucker. Because, you know, oh, antibiotics, that's what you need. For depression now, that's the response a lot of people have. You know, I struggle with depression. Oh, come on, man. Let's go for a walk. Huh? Let's do things. Things and stuff. Be great. No, you're not getting it. It's like an actual medical issue with the brain. So what this means is we can actually move towards effective treatments and not just the, hey, pep yourself up, big guy, or hey, only do therapy. And that helps some people, and I'm not begrudging that for if it does help people. But many people it doesn't help, and it's, oh, you just talk. Well, that's not a long-term cure per se. So now we can actually go towards more effective treatments, come up with better drugs that maybe can, I don't know if it's even possible to tweak the genome. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. But is it possible to do certain things that override that default setting in somebody's brain that makes them depressed? Well, that's what science is working on now. Good that we know this, we have this information now, and it allows us to try to pivot away from the stigma and move in the right direction in terms of the proper treatment. Okay. All right, guys, out of time. Love you. Back on Tuesday, latest and worst case scenario, Wednesday. Mwah. Much love. I'm gone. Peace.